The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
This is from the Blue Cliff Record. Koan Collection, Zhaozhou, Let's Asses Cross, Let's Horses Cross, the main case. A student once asked Master Zhaozhou, "For a long time I've heard of the stone bridge of Zhaozhou, but now that I've come here, I just see a simple log bridge." Zhaozhou said, "You see the log bridge, you don't see the stone bridge." The student said, "What is the stone bridge?" Zhaozhou said, "It lets asses cross, it lets horses cross." The verse. He doesn't set up the solitary and dangerous. In that, his path is lofty. Entering the ocean, he must hook a giant tortoise. His contemporary, the elder Huang Zhi, is worth a laugh. Though he knew how to say whistling arrow, his effort was in vain. Oh, good morning. Welcome to our new year. So this is a time as we often reflect on things, which can be good. As we think sort of backwards and forwards at the same time, am I growing more stable in my mind or more distracted? Is my heart growing more courageous or more fearful? Is my life moving more in accord with my aspirations or further away? Am I allowing more and more people and the world into my life? Or am I creating more boundaries? In our practice, we develop awareness so that we can see in all kinds of ways, using all of our senses and more. And that awareness is not a thing, it's not a tool, and yet it's important that it be functioning. And so we examine things to see them clearly. We reflect. There's a practice of, when you're going to bed at night, reflecting on the day. As a person of the way, as a practitioner, waking up and reflecting on the day to come. How do I want to enter into this day? I've always liked this koan. Zhaozhou is sort of a luminous figure within the Zen tradition, a Chinese master, 9th century, I believe. He lived 120 years, so he had a long time to live in the Dharma. He came to realization very early in his life. He was still in his late teens. He studied with several different teachers. Most importantly, Nanchuan was his primary teacher. He traveled. He went on an extended pilgrimage at a late age in his life. And then he settled in the town of Zhaozhou, which is how he took his name, which was famous for having a very, I think, a one-of-a-kind stone bridge at that time. There's an interesting story of when he met Nanchuan. He had already been studying with a teacher, but he came to Nanchuan, and who was laying down. Nanchuan was also a very highly regarded teacher at that time. And Nanchuan was resting when Zhaozhou came to greet him. And Nanchuan says, "Where have you come from?" He's a new monk, just coming to his monastery. And Zhaozhou said, "I've come from the temple of the standing image." And Nanchuan said, "Did you see the standing image?" And Zhaozhou said, "No, but I have seen a reclining Buddha." Nanchuan then sat up and said, "As a novice monk, do you have a teacher or not?" And Zhaozhou said, "I have a teacher." And Nanchuan said, "Who is your teacher?" And Zhaozhou stepped forward and said, "In this bitter, bitter cold, I am so happy that my master is in good health." And Nanchuan called his attendant and said, "Put out a special seat for this monk." Quite an introduction. And he went on to study with Nanchuan for a long time, many years. And then even after he died, he stayed at that monastery for quite a while. And then he went traveling, pilgrimage, before he settled down. So he sort of holds that figure, one of many, but a very large figure of a person who's really dedicated to the path, to the Dharma, and to being a student. It's said that he said he would study with anybody, no matter how young they might be. He had humility, and he would teach anybody who wanted to study the Dharma, no matter how old. So here this student comes to the town of Zhaozhou and meets Zhaozhou. He's a monastic, and says, "I've heard a long time about this stone bridge, but I only see a wooden bridge." And Zhaozhou said, "You just see the log bridge. You don't see the stone bridge." Another translation says, "Well, if all you see is a wooden bridge, then of course you don't see the stone bridge." So the nature of the koan, I spoke on Friday night for the introductory, folks here for the weekend, introductory retreat, that the Buddha taught three trainings in this path. So there's the training of the precepts and living a moral life, which means to give up and begin to really work with what he called unwholesome actions, actions that cause negative karma, harm, and to bring forth wholesome actions, in other words, to live well. And then to calm the mind in our meditation, develops mindfulness and concentration, samadhi, and then to gain insight, because that ultimately is what really transforms our lives, because we understand directly through experience, non-conceptually, the nature of things, how things, what things are, how they function together. And so then we can live more and more in accord with things as they are because we experience them as they are. And so then the question becomes, well, how to bring students to insight, given that it's by nature a non-conceptual path. If it was just, insight was, well, you just need to learn these things, master these ideas, memorize these teachings, then everybody would be enlightened. But it's not, because it's not about knowledge. It's not about concepts that we hold in our mind, although they can help. And so how to bring about for students an experience within themselves that they themselves have to do, but they can't will it because you can't make yourself go beyond your thinking mind, right? And have a non-conceptual direct experience of reality. It doesn't work that way, because that's just more duality at work. And so there are different forms of meditation practice that help to do that. Some that are very bare and spacious, like Shikantaza, others that are very direct, like the koan, that gives you an inquiry, gives the student an inquiry to engage in that is to bring insight as a result of that inquiry. There are other forms of meditation that that are inquiring by nature. And in a sense, all of these begin with some sort of basis in conceptual thinking, because here's a language, here's a narrative, we have to understand what the words mean. But in the meditation, the student is ultimately going beyond that. And that's something that, you know, you can describe to a certain extent, but only so far. That's where it comes down to the student and their own practice. And so the koans function in that way. And so they, in this case, use very ordinary language, but in non-ordinary ways. You could look at this as just a simple conversation, and then it's not. Zhaozhou says, "You see the log bridge, you don't see the stone bridge." Well, what is the stone bridge? Satsuma asks. It lets asses cross, mules cross, it lets horses cross. Zhaozhou lives in the world we live in, the ordinary world. It's the only world there is. But he was not confined by ordinary capacities or by ordinary ways of thinking things. He knew the difference between a wooden bridge and a stone bridge. He sees the wooden bridge as a wooden bridge. He sees a stone bridge as a stone bridge. He sees each of them as complete and perfect in their own way. He sees a bridge like he sees a person, as an aggregate of parts, a constellation, an orchestra of instruments, you might say. And he has seen that body and those parts all the way through. He sees the bridge. He sees this student standing in front of him as empty of anything that can be held on to, can be possessed, to have pride over. Master Hakuin said, when you hear of this bridge, it is as heavy as 9 tons. After seeing it clearly, it's as light as a single feather. It's as heavy as 9 tons, this stone bridge. It's important. It's special. It's better than the other ones. It's a source of pride. It costs a lot. It has to be protected. After seeing it, it's as light as a single feather. The student only sees the wooden bridge, cannot yet see the stone bridge. It's there, but they can't see it. Maybe he's looking for something extraordinary, and so he can't see what is extraordinary because it's so plain. Zhaozhou, though, is not disturbed by this. He sees the bridge, he sees the student, he sees himself. That's what we practice to do, to see ourselves. And even in those words, it can already be creating confusion. When Dogen says to study the way is to study the self, what self is he talking about? The deluded self? The enlightened self? The self that is angry, the self that is compassionate, the self that is effortful, the self that is lazy, which one? And so to meet oneself is to bring forth compassion. Because we both realize the true nature of the self is free and peaceful in its very nature. And we also, one feels more and more keenly the pain that we inflict upon ourselves and others that is wholly unnecessary, but hard to resist. When there is no abiding self, then who is it that feels insulted? Who is it that feels pride? Who is it that gets jealous? Who is it that is competing? When there is no abiding self, who is it that is afraid of death? Whose death? It lets horses cross, it lets asses cross. Rich and poor, young and old, fast and slow, sentient and insentient. Is he talking about the bridge? Is he talking about a bridge? What's he talking about? The footnote to that says, a single net cast over asses and horses covers everything. In fact, all the people in the world have no place to breathe. Once dead, they don't come back to life again. And this is where, in Buddhist teachings, and very often in the Zen tradition of teachings, there is a whole sort of beautiful flowering of language, poetry, poetic references that often point to things directly in an indirect way. The commentator here is pointing to something very directly, but he's using language in a way that doesn't explain, doesn't nail it down for you. which means we have to enter in. Imagine this net cast over everything. A place where there's a state where there's no place to breathe. Now, naturally, we would think of that as confining, a place of suffocation. But a place to breathe means there's a place where we're breathing from in to out and out to in. We're taking something from the outside and bringing it in, taking something inside and taking it out. When that space disappears, then what? When a person is practicing the breath and they become the breath and they're no longer breathing, aware, what is it then? Once dead, they come back to life. Dead here means a spiritual death, a death of the ego, of the self, of the letting go, seeing that it's just a construction. And that once we deeply realize that the self is a construction, it dies to the idea of being me, of being permanent. It doesn't come back to life again, right? Unless I bring it back to life. If all forms of unhappiness, misery, pain and confusion, aggression and violence arise out of self-clinging, and all forms of self-clinging arise out of a sense of self and other, how else could we cling if there wasn't me and something? How else could I be greedy if there wasn't me and something I want? How else could I be angry if there wasn't me and you, the person I'm angry at? Self-clinging, by its very nature, creates distance. It's dependent upon distance. And so what happens when you're sitting and you begin to close the distance, which really just means don't create some. When the mind moves and we begin thinking, we're creating distance. The breath just starts to recede into our awareness, from our awareness. When an emotion arises, we get entangled in, we begin to move away from the object of our attention, which is the breath, which is what we're trying to move closer to and dissolve that distance. And so we see the mind's habit to continually want to fly away, to create more distance between me and me. And when I create distance between me and me, I create distance between me and you. And so that sense of self arises when I think, in words or without words, I am. But how is it when that comes to rest? When that construction, that creation, those fabrications, just rest. You don't have to stop them. You don't have to go on strike. You don't have to shut it down. That just creates more agitation. When you just come to rest, when the mind and body and everything comes into a natural state of repose, then how is it? Shantideva said, having strong attachments to other living beings obstructs my correct views, prevents letting go of what causes my suffering and causes sorrow throughout my life. While I preoccupy myself with the fleeting things of this life, my life is passing by. Where is the meaning? While I preoccupy myself with the things that are passing, trying to hold on to them, hold on to them, hold on to them, my life is passing by. Jojo says, you only see the log bridge, you don't see the stone bridge. And the student says, well, what is the stone bridge? Finally, he asks a genuine question. A cook cannot give delicious food to someone who is not hungry. It will have no appeal. A doctor can't offer life-saving medicine to someone who doesn't know or isn't willing to admit that they're ill. A teacher cannot offer the Dharma to someone who is not seeking. It will not be heard. So they wait for the student to appear. It's said that when the student is ready, the teacher appears. The teacher's there. It's when the student is ready. That's why it's such an important aspect of the path that we bring ourselves to the Dharma. we have to go seeking and find the Dharma. You have to bring yourself here today, right? We each have to put ourselves on that cushion. We have to practice our own mind. It can't be any other way, right? Nobody can do it. You can't hire that out, job it out, right? Pay somebody to do your Zazen for you. You could try. I mean, I don't know. See. We had a couple of students enter into training this weekend. You know, this place exists for anyone who wants to come and encounter the Dharma, practice the Dharma. And folks come and seeking different things. Seeking to learn about meditation, seeking to be with community, in a community that they find meaningful, seeking to just have a meditation hall to sit in, seeking the Dharma. And all of that's good. All of that, I think, brings benefit to a person's life. For the Buddha and what has been passed down is that the ultimate good of the Dharma, there are so many aspects of it that can be good, that are good, but the ultimate good is when it frees your body and mind. When it opens up the heart in selflessness to want to alleviate the suffering of all beings. And so that's why when people want to enter into formal training, Dada Roshi said, as I mentioned to these new students earlier in the weekend, you know, that at that time, very early in the Dharma coming to this country, centers were forming, and the normal thing was you just go and you become a member. You pay some dues, you become a member, the doors open, you avail yourself of what's made available. And Dada Roshi said, I don't want members, I want students. It's a different mind, it's a different thing. I want somebody who's studying the Dharma, not just has membership in something. And so those barrier gates were set up to slow down and clarify. I was telling them that when I did my Guardian Council meeting, it was up in what is now the all-gender non-binary room, which was then the library. And I went in, and there were several seniors just sitting on couches smoking cigarettes. Because everybody smokes cigarettes, right? And I just walked in. I don't really remember much about it. I just remember standing there, you know. And they asked me some questions, and I answered, and that was it, and I left. And it was formal for that time. That was formal. But the process was the same. It was still, why? You don't have to do this. You could keep doing what you're doing, come as you have been. Why do you want to take this step? So the monk finally says, what is the stone bridge? And Jiazhou said, it lets asses cross. It lets horses cross. Another translation says, cross over, cross over. Why wait any longer? You've come this far. Time does pass swiftly. Jiazhou said, asses cross, horses cross. What is that? This bridge that allows all of creation to cross. Our discriminating consciousness sees, names, divides, ranks, includes and excludes in a second, in an instant, without our apparent even trying. I remember in my earlier sitting thinking, just watching that happen just, you know, like spontaneously, it seemed. And I thought, I guess that's just never going to stop. I couldn't even conceive that that would ever not happen because it was just so reliable. And then I began to see that it was starting to quiet down. But that's what discriminating consciousness, as is understood in Buddhism, does. It ranks. It creates high and low, right and wrong, inside and outside, what's desired and what's rejected. This bridge doesn't do that. Are we talking about a bridge? And it's really important to understand in that that non-discriminating consciousness, no boundaries in the mind, no boundaries, therefore no fear. That having no boundaries, realizing that in the mind, that boundaries don't exist, you can put up a fence to separate your property from your neighbor's. The fence doesn't know boundary. It's just wood or stone. It doesn't separate anything. We do that. Sometimes, often, that creates problems. Who's inside of that and who's outside of it? Who's high and who's low? Who's deserving and who's undeserving? Every human illness comes down to this. How could we hurt somebody if I didn't put myself above them? What I want, my view, is more important than yours. And so we practice reclaiming the mind's natural capacity to let everything across. That's why it's so important in Zazen, when things arise, to not judge them. Right? That's the gatekeeper. No, you don't get in. Yeah, come on in. I like you. Bring your friends. And so to calm that mind, that reactive, discerning, judging, discriminating mind, not discerning, discriminating, dividing, separating. So that when we do need to create a boundary, we open a door, sometimes we need to close a door. Sometimes we need to build a fence. But now we can do it only because out of a desire to help. Right. I draw this boundary so that you can learn how to respect a boundary. Not respecting a boundary is not being spacious. It's not being non-discriminatory. It's being selfish. It's being confused. And so sometimes we have to create a boundary to help someone learn how to be in a world where there are boundaries that we need to respect. If that doesn't exist in a student-teacher relationship, the student and the teacher are in trouble. And it's important for the student to know what the boundaries are. It's particularly important for the teacher to know. And one of the important discernments for the teacher is the teacher can't need anything from the student. If they need something from the student, they're in trouble. They can want for the student to practice, to realize himself. That's what they commit their lives to, but they can't need that to happen. And so letting everything pass is one truth. Sometimes having a gatekeeper is another truth. But it arises out of the desire to help only. It's like when you have to speak of another's errors or faults or offer critical words. To follow the precept is to take no pleasure in that. It doesn't make me feel better about myself to offer this criticism to you. I don't want to do that, but I think it will help. It's done without any ill will. It lets horses cross, it lets asses cross. In a sense, to say it let... Thank you. To say it lets them cross is already a setup for that to come apart. What if the next day it decides, no more asses. Sorry, I'm done with the asses. Horses, come along. They just pass. They just cross. To go beyond acceptance as well as rejection. acceptance is better. It works. We have to practice that. Because if we're not, then we're probably rejecting. But then but it's still a choice. It's a good choice. But it's still conscious. There's still self-accepting something. How is it when it's just crossing over? To accept is a door that can shut at any time. But when we need to practice that, we practice that. We practice it all the time. So that becomes more and more natural, integrated. And then the choice can fall away. It's like in anything. When we're learning how to do anything, speak a language, play an instrument, paint a dance, paint, be a surgeon. You know, there's a point, teach a class, raise a child. There are points where we have to be very aware of the skills that are required and be developing those skills. And we have to remember what those skills are and how this follows this and this works together with this. It's very conscious. It has to be. And that brings us to a point with continued practice where all of that begins to fall away. We don't have to do that so much. And that's how the way, the Dharma, merges with the life. In the beginning, we sometimes have to work very hard just to get to the cushion or to remember to be mindful. Right? And so when we train together, there are many things that are here to remind us all, to remind us to do those things. Bells and drums and liturgy and other people, gestures, mudras, altars, to remind us that, oh yeah, I am on a path, I am trying to do something, I am working with my mind, I want to remember this. Xiaozhou, one of the things that ways in which Xiaozhou is celebrated is that there were other teachers who were very dynamic, big voices, lots of striking and shouting, trying to find ways to sort of release the grasp of a student, in a way startle them out of what they were holding on to. Xiaozhou wasn't like that. In the poem, it says he doesn't set up the solitary and dangerous. In that, his path is lofty. He's looking for a giant tortoise. He's not looking for minnows. He's looking for a giant tortoise, right? He's looking for a Buddha. In the commentary, it says, other teachers may tower up like a 10-mile-high wall to display the extraordinary spiritual effects of Buddha Dharma. But though they're solitary and dangerous, lofty and steep, this is not as good as not setting up the solitary and dangerous and simply acting ordinary, naturally turning smoothly. Xiaozhou doesn't establish anything, yet he himself is well established. He doesn't make anything high, yet he is high. When capacity goes beyond solitary and dangerous, only then do we see profound wonders. It's like if you look at the Oxfordian pictures downstairs, which depict a spiritual journey, and at the very end, this person, dusty, right, tattered clothes, just ambling around. They're not shining. In fact, there's a phrase that talks about losing your shine, right? In our culture, we love shiny things. The more shine, the better, right? It gets our attention. And we think high spirit, great spirituality should be very shiny. You should enter in on a cloud, right? Part the seas, levitate, miracles. In Buddha Dharma, the miracle is breathing in and breathing out. The miracle is seeing your anger arise and meeting it with compassion. The verse to that Oxfordian last one says, entering the marketplace barefoot and unadorned, blissfully smiling, though covered in dust and ragged of clothes. Using no supernatural power, you bring the withered trees spontaneously into bloom. In other words, we see things alive. Alive. As they are. And I think that's good medicine. I mean, it's just basic to it, Buddhism. It's practice. Because what is the shine? It's self. It's ego. It's pride. It's being somebody. And I think that's such good medicine in a time when there's so much clamoring for power to be the source of light, radiating, to have a microphone. Have a microphone. By all means, have a microphone. To be the expert, to assert opinions. And look, I think it's really great that people develop expertise in certain areas. I'm not putting that down at all. But it's the thing about being a thing. Being a person isn't enough. Being sincere, being trustworthy, being patient, being generous, being aware is not enough. It is, actually. And in that, our lives bloom, our hearts open, and we want to help naturally. The desire we all have always had, to help, can now bloom too, because it's not being held back by the gatekeeper. And so for those of you who have joined us for this weekend, I hope it was a good retreat. I felt like there was a lot of very, very sincere seeking in my conversations with you. So really, which is wonderful. It's very inspiring, right? And so I would just encourage you to keep close to your hunger, right? I hope you leave this table not full. I hope you leave this table and head home still hungry. If you're full, then we have failed. And now, where does that hunger take you? Where will you take yourself with that hunger? Make it a true path. Make it a good path. Make it worthy of your precious life and your energy and time. And come back to see us, if you like. The door's always open. I'll end with a poem of Wu Men's. Hundreds of flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer and snow in winter. When there's no self-clinging cloud in your mind, for you, this is a good season.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.